Greetings and welcome to the Net Positive Podcast. I am your host, Ted Flanagan, and this episode of the Net Positive features a conversation with Johnny Weiss. He's the founder of Solar Energy International. He was the director for many years. He's worked throughout the United States and around the world promoting solar. Johnny, thank you for joining the Net Positive Podcast this afternoon. How are you?
Great. I'm just great. It's good to be here.
And I'm just talking to you. Are you in Paonia, Colorado, as we speak?
Yep, on the western slope, Paonia, Colorado.
Well, thanks again for joining this podcast. And I wanted to start off, as I do with everybody, because it's just all these interesting characters that I'm interviewing. But I wanted to start off all the way back in your youth. And I think you're from the Boston area, Massachusetts. Is that right?
Well, I like to say I'm from New England, but I'm really kind of rounding up. I grew up in New Jersey. I was born in New York City, went to school in Massachusetts for a while. But I came out to Colorado when I was just in my early 20s and haven't looked back that much.
And what brought you out to Colorado?
Well, I had a chance to build a house out here. I was in construction at the time, and I got an opportunity to be the construction foreman and build a house in Aspen, Colorado. And it was a real fun summer out here, and I decided I was all ready to drop out of college and become a contractor and live in Colorado.
And that's what you did.
Exactly.
Unbelievable. Much to your parents' chagrin, I presume.
Well, that's true. I never did complete my graduate and undergraduate work, but things have worked out pretty well overall.
I would say so. You have accomplished so much in your life. It's very, very, very admirable. But we'll get to that. So you built the house in Colorado. What was the genesis of Solar Energy International? It seems like you were teaching at Colorado Mountain College.
Right. Solar Energy International, SEI, kind of grew organically out of my career and out of the career of my associates, too. I started off as a solar builder and then got involved in teaching and then was able to get a position at the local community college back in the Jimmy Carter days. And that evolved after a decade of teaching solar at the community college. We were able to kind of spin it off and start our own nonprofit and get going with Solar Energy International, SEI.
And what was the original mission?
Well, the mission, the purpose of SEI hasn't changed all that much. It's to promote training a global workforce in the practical applications of solar technology. And these days it's really focused pretty much on photovoltaic technology. We started off doing solar thermal and other applications, but these days it's really evolved into a PV training organization.
It seems, I want to talk about your international works, but your student population, if you had to characterize over all these years, would it be half international, half domestic, or am I off there?
Well, I think the majority is still domestic, but we certainly have had a lot of international participation. And SEI really has two main focuses now. It does hands-on nuts and bolts practical training, which is what it's noted for, particularly after 30 years now. But it also has a very robust online training program. And the online training program has enabled people to very cost-effectively take solar energy classes and workshops and courses from all over the world at an affordable price. So now that there's such a robust online presence, that has brought in more people from all over the world. I think there's 141 countries that we've now had participants from.
That is really fantastic. A lot of that impact was you laying a foundation over many, many years. And I was on your board just for a few years before the online courses took hold, and we were sort of envisioning that. But you guys were just values-based workers. You and Ken were just putting your heart and souls into this whole educational institute and, hardly taking any income. And it was just I give you tremendous credit for really putting blood, sweat, and tears into that organization, that if you hadn't done that, it wouldn't be where it is today.
Well, it really was a grassroots effort, but things were different 30 years ago now. It's been, SEI is going to celebrate its 30th year. Like I say, it did evolve organically from being involved in community college education, having a chance to be a solar builder. And we put together a very great team of dedicated people early that just really helped us get going and establish ourselves as a training organization. And it really was a grassroots effort. And yeah, we had some tough years, but things have matured and solar has gone mainstream and it's a whole different era now. And we're just poised to take it to a whole nother level.
Tell me a favorite story from the early years.
Oh, favorite story from the early years. Let me think. Well, maybe you can relate to this one too, Ted, being a Colorado boy yourself in many ways. One of the things that got us going in the community doing photovoltaics particularly was our work on the cross-country ski huts between Aspen and Vail in the high country. There's a wonderful organization, the 10th Mountain Hut System, and they were very interested in getting rid of the dangerous propane that they had powering lights and emergency equipment up there. So we had a chance to work with the 10th Mountain Huts and install solar electric lighting systems, real simple DC lighting systems. But those systems really got us going with photovoltaics. And we're talking now about the early 1980s. PV was very expensive and it was really a very elite, expensive technology. But to be able to take students from all over the world, frankly, up to do installations in the high country of Colorado was really a wonderful adventure for us. It got us really doing some wonderful off-grid systems, and it really helped launch SEI as a fun and exciting and adventurous place to learn about solar energy.
I seem to remember llamas carrying the panels up to those pictures.
Yeah. That was a photo that went viral back in the old days. We also learned that while the llamas would carry those small, back then we were talking about 30-watt modules, by the way, not 300-watt modules. But we also learned something about llamas, too, that they don't like to carry heavy batteries. We had to lug the batteries ourselves, but the llamas got in the photo carrying the PV.
You know, Johnny, when you mentioned the batteries, when I think of SEI, I think largely what you've done in the developing world, where largely off the grid system, so solar was coupled with batteries, like you did for those huts, obviously the 10th Mountain Division huts, you obviously had solar and storage. What percentage of sort of SEI's focus has been off grid versus grid interacting with the grid?
Well, that's been a real evolution, too. When we started back in what we now call the home power days, most of the participants that came to us to study were do-it-yourselfers, they were homeowners, they were folks that wanted to live off-grid or were already living off-grid. They came to us by way of Home Power magazine, and some of them were preppers, but they were basically individuals that were looking at using photovoltaic technology themselves. And it was very much an off-grid, standalone sort of market. So we started with batteries way back when. But then there's been quite an evolution, too. There were a bunch of years where we were encouraged to just drop the batteries from the curriculum completely. Let's go to, grid direct systems. We had participants come that were starting their own solar businesses and they weren't interested at all in batteries. They wanted to know how to do grid direct systems. And that was quite a few years of that. But now the whole pendulum is swinging back the other way. And now energy storage is just a critical part of the big picture. And we're back to batteries again. And now we're into a whole new generation of batteries and a very exciting time for the whole technology, as you and your listeners well know.
Yeah, maybe the llamas would carry the lithium ion batteries. They're
good point. Smaller. Good point. As long as they didn't let them get too hot or overcharged, we'd be just fine.
So then how did SEI do the international work, or was that Johnny Weiss as an independent consultant? Or you had all these students, obviously, that came in from all over the world. I mean, you had amazing classes. And then I presume some of them asked you to come and help them with projects in their own countries.
Yes, the international thing started, and it was very presumptuous, frankly, to call ourselves a Solar Energy International. It was quite presumptive, but But we were excited about it. And we were excited about it particularly because we got a chance to work with the Pan American Health Organization just in the last years of the 80s. This organization, PAHO, Pan American Health Organization, called us up and they said that they needed some trainers, some solar teachers to help them understand how to integrate solar into the cold chain to keep vaccines cold in remote areas for at remote health clinics and dispensaries. And they said they didn't want professors that were going to talk to them about how the PN junction worked and the various efficiencies of different modules. They really wanted to know, how do we hook this stuff up? How do we get it to work in the real world? How do we train refrigeration technicians who are experts on refrigeration? How do we get them to be able to install, operate, and maintain and troubleshoot solar-powered refrigeration systems? So that was an opportunity, one of the first opportunities we really had to take a look at the whole international side of things. And that was in the late 1980s. And all of us, Ken Olson, my co-instructor, and Steve McCarney, we all had a chance to go to Latin America, Central America, South America, and spend some time training refrigeration technicians for the Pan American Health Organization in how to design and troubleshoot and maintain, you know, vaccine refrigerators in the developing world. And that really opened our eyes to the opportunities and to the fun, frankly. That was really opened our eyes to say that, gee, we can get involved in some really exciting stuff and do some important work that really is going to make a difference in the world. And this whole PV technology makes a lot of sense. And here we are being asked to do what we really love to do. And it did have an international component that was integral to it. So that's when we decided, why not? Let's include international in our dreams as well. And from that experience, we just went on and were able to take advantage of other opportunities that came by as well.
When I think about you going off and helping develop these systems in the developing world, I'm just in awe of it, because it seems to me that you're a nuts and bolts guy. They want you to be able to hook something up and for it to work, and so it seems like you've got to have all your parts organized. You know, you can't just have the thought, right? And the concept, yeah, here, you have to have all your parts, all your tools in order to get a job to work. And there must be tremendous logistic challenges in doing that in foreign countries.
Absolutely. And those challenges remain today. The work we're doing overseas is a perfect example of that. But now we're not just working on particular systems. Now the challenge is to help develop training centers overseas. And we're doing that overseas as well as in North America here. You know, developing training centers is really the way we're going to be able to really move forward and have an impact on climate change and be able to really address the serious issues. We're looking at really going to a scale and having a larger impact than ever before. So the development of training centers has all of those logistics issues times a thousand.
I was looking on your website, and it sounds like you worked in over 30 countries helping to develop systems, and you've also worked with the tribes here, the Native American tribes here in America. Can you talk a little bit about this Maasai project in Tanzania, where it sounds like you're doing a solar, or you did, I don't know what year this was, but a solar-powered radio station?
Well, we're still working on that. Things take a while to develop, but we are working with Lucas Koriangi, who is a Maasai community leader, and he's an alumni from SEI back in 1997. 25 years ago, he got sponsored to come by a friend of mine. We gave him a scholarship. He returned to his Maasai community and has been doing solar work ever since. Real small scale, off-grid systems, teaching people. Now he's starting a grassroots solar training center in the village of Orkesmet, which is an off-grid remote village where we're slowly developing a demonstration and training center, which is going to help Maasai youth in terms of employment and is going to make a real difference in these communities. These are folks that are living in the dirt and in the dark. and a little bit of solar power goes a long way. Charging cell phones is now a very important part of what we need to do as well. Lighting systems, cell phone charging. And Lucas is a community organizer that's working with grassroots groups over there in the Maasai community of the Simanjaro district of Tanzania, East Africa. And we've been able to continue to work with him and with his associates. And basically we're doing capacity building. We're trying to develop a training center there that'll service the local community and provide jobs and training for his students as well. So we're trying to clone SEI in a very different sort of way. And that's exciting work, and that's proceeding even though there's certain challenges, and I haven't been able to travel there recently because of COVID, but that's an ongoing project. And like I say, Lucas was a student from 24 years ago, so working with that particular alumnus has been a real pleasure. And it's been a challenge, but a wonderful experience, and there's opportunity for people to get involved in that too. These folks need a lot of help from a lot of different directions. But the Tanzanian Renewable Energy Association, you know, is recognizing these grassroots efforts, and we're trying to connect the dots over there. There's Arusha Technical College, which is starting to offer solar training classes. So one thing we're trying to do is strengthen and expand the existing infrastructure. It's not a question of franchising our services. It's a question of finding out where these folks are at and how we can actually help them with their goals and their needs in their particular communities. So it's really about capacity building for solar in the developing world. What got me started in Africa was the organization called We Care Solar. We Care Solar is based out of Berkeley, California, and they're focused on doing lighting systems and systems that provide medical electrical services at remote rural health clinics. We Care Solar is providing energy and lighting beyond the last mile. This is an organization that invited me to do some training years ago and helped me get excited about doing this work in Africa as well. And they're having a huge impact all over the world. We Care Solar is doing thousands and thousands of systems, and they're all going for maternal health care. That's their focus, and they've got a wonderful package, and I'm indebted to them for getting me so excited about working in rural communities in Africa.
It's good stuff. And you mentioned these people living in the dirt and the dark.
Mm-hmm.
I visited Kenya a couple of years ago and in the Masai Mara, and wow, so I have a little bit of a sense of what you're talking about when you say the dirt and the dark, but I guess it's so nicely well characterized, but it must also be so rewarding when you bring light, when the lights come on, and the gratitude that they must give you.
It's very rewarding. And these are folks that are very, very grateful to have that sort of help. And a little bit goes a long way. And it has been very rewarding work. It's wonderful when the Maasai women's group that gets to install solar systems in a women's cooperative house there, you know, when they want to reward me by giving me a cow. Cows are very special throughout the whole Maasai culture. And I explained that, I was very grateful they wanted to give me such an important gift, but unless they had a cow that could fly, I couldn't take it with me. So they enjoyed the story that perhaps if they could come up with a flying cow, that would be a more appropriate gift. But it's very rewarding work. It truly is very special when you turn the lights on for people that have never experienced that before. It changes lives, and things like pumping water. So much energy is spent by women and children all over the world. It sounds like a cliche, but it's true. There's so much human energy that goes into doing simple things like moving water and gathering firewood and things like this. And there's, 1.5 billion people on the earth that are living that way. And to have a little bit of impact there and to create some models that others can use, it truly is rewarding work. It's a lot of fun too. It's a great adventure driving around the bumpy African roads with a bunch of solar technicians repairing and installing solar systems is a whole hell of a lot of fun.
And then talk, if you would, just about your work with the Native Americans.
Well, that's really exciting these days. You know, another SEI alumni from over 15 years ago is Henry Redcloud. And Henry Redcloud is the direct fifth descendant generation from Chief Henry Redcloud of the Lakota Sioux, one of the great warriors and one of the great Indian peacemakers on the Northern Great Plains, 150 years ago. And Henry and his family, his Teoshpaye, they call it, it's the extended family group up there, has started a training center, and we're helping with capacity building there. It's the Red Cloud Renewable Energy Center, RICRAC. And it's been around for a decade now, but it's now gathering some real momentum. And we hope that with the federal administration and the encouraging Green New Deal that's happening, we hope that some of it will indeed trickle down to our Native American associates, and we'll be able to take that training center to another level. But up on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation, which is frankly a desperate and tragic place in many ways. It's a hard life on the Pine Ridge Res, but having a solar training center there that's helping educate youth from all over the Northern Great Plains. Henry and his associates are connected with 37 different tribes. There's 574 tribes in North America, and Henry Redcloud is a leader and connected with so many of them. So we're bringing tribes in from all around the Northern Great Plains to study. It's a small program. We get a dozen students at a time, but this summer, the solar training has cranked up there again. We're doing workshops this month and last month as well. And we're actually training people that are going mainstream. After completing several workshops and training sessions up there, they now qualify to sit for the NABCEP, the North American Board of Certified Energy Practitioners, the mainstream organization that provides a third-party certification. So to get Native Americans on that track to become professional trainers and professional installers and entrepreneurs in the whole solar world is also very exciting and rewarding work. And right now we feel that working with Native Americans and working with Henry up there has a lot of momentum too. It's been a lurchy process to get training centers like that going, but this is really a model one. And we think it's gonna really make a difference to a lot of lives across the Northern Great Plains. Some of those participants are gonna go on to be solar trainers. Some are gonna go back to their communities and be solar advocates to help educate their community leaders, the tribal officials, and let folks know about the opportunity that solar energy presents. Many of them will also become, hopefully, entrepreneurs and start small solar installing dealership businesses, installing dealers on their various reservations. So we're hoping to get some multiplier effect as things move forward. Ted, it's a lot like 25, 30 years ago, though, on the res. We're going back in time. We're doing small systems. We're focused on standalone systems, doing systems that are going to give elders that are living off-grid lights and power for the first time. Things like water pumping are very important there, too. And it's, like I say, it's like 20 or 30 years ago in terms of starting solar industries, solar businesses, helping entrepreneurs get started with the design and installation of small-scale systems. And there's also the opportunity to do large-scale megawatt systems on these reservations too. And the reservations are blessed with a lot of sun and a lot of wind power too, frankly. So I think we're going to see renewable energies get more and more developed on various reservations across the country. And the opportunity that Henry's providing people up at Pine Ridge, www.redcloudrenewable.org, redcloudrenewable.org, will get people up to speed on what's going on up there. And there's lots of opportunities to volunteer and to do all kinds of work for folks that want to have that cross-cultural experience and also have a chance to help develop a solar training center on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation.
And what state is that in, Johnny?
Oh, that's South Dakota. That's the southwest corner of South Dakota, just south of the Black Hills.
It's incredible to hear your stories and to realize that you've done such grassroots work, but then the leverage when you educate, when you train, when you create this generation of advocates that are out there and on the reservations or in their countries in Africa or whatnot, the leverage is just absolutely fantastic. Talk about SEI today. You and Ken founded it 30 years ago, and you were the director, and you and Ken were SEI. He went off, I think, to South America for a while, and you were leading it, and then you went off you went off on your own for a while, and it sounds like you're back. You're on the board. You're engaged, and you can now be just hugely proud of what's going on, and a great champion of SEI.
Well, that's a real special opportunity, which I'm thankful for and I acknowledge for, to be retired from the day-to-day activity there for nearly a decade now, but still have a chance. SEI, I was on the committee to help select the new executive director, and we've got some wonderful process going on in revising and updating the strategic plan for SEI, and to have that opportunity after 30 years to be able to offer that perspective and to still be involved, not as a decision maker, but as an advisor, as a consultant, and to be involved in the organization is a real blessing for me personally. But SEI developed a great team of people over the years, a very dedicated bunch of people, some of whom you know, some have gone on back to work. Lori Stone has been working with the Rocky Mountain Institute, which is part of your roots, of course, too. But we've had some great participation over the years. And it's really, like I say, a pleasure to be able to stay involved, even in my, quote, retirement years. I get to focus on the charitable and outreach programs now. And being a board member, I can really work on the projects that have come to mean so much to me.
That's really fantastic. And I ask this of all people that I interview for this podcast about their a little bit about their non-work life and so their work-life balance and you and I have both had just such incredibly fulfilling careers. I love what I do. You love what you do. That's been hugely fulfilling. But how do you get balance? What are some of the things that you do to unwind, to maintain your creativity, maintain your energies?
Well, the other whole part besides our work life, I've had a wonderful family life over the years too. I've got two 30-year-old sons now who are on their own, but getting to spend time with them, particularly this last COVID year, has been fun as well. So I think family has added some real balance to me too. But I've got some wonderful recreational habits too. I'm a kind of an amateur fly fisherman, so I like to get out into the rivers, and that helps me balance a little bit too, gets me outdoors. I've also got a love for being a dog owner. I've got a new 1-year-old dog right now that is getting me out quite a bit. So, I love having a dog as a pet and as a companion, and I think it adds some balance and some fun to my life as well. So, it's a balance, but I've always enjoyed the work. I've always had trouble, frankly, with the boundaries between work and family and play, but overall, I think it's worked out pretty well.
Yeah, I would say so. You're going strong, and congratulations on all you have accomplished. It's not like the end, but all that you have accomplished is very, very impressive to me and to others. So I congratulate you, and I think you must be able to sleep well at night knowing that you've made just this huge contribution to sustainable energy and improving the quality of life for so many people.
That's been a real treat, of course. But right now I think we're really poised, and I'm delighted that SEI is ready to expand, frankly, on a level, Ted, that I never imagined. I'm on record at a retreat that we had, a staff retreat and board retreat years ago, as saying that when SEI got to several million dollars and had a few campuses around the world, and when there was 50 employees, and I didn't know anybody's name anymore. That was truly the extent of my vision. But right now, having lived long enough and be able to see that now SEI and the whole solar industry, it's not just SEI, but we are poised that it's a remarkable time in history for solar energy, for photovoltaics, for this technology, for all of us. And I'm glad I've lived long enough to experience it, but we can enjoy the accomplishments we've had, but the task ahead of us is formidable. And I think that, SEI's goal is to train, millions of people to to be able to help train millions of people and help other organizations train people to really deal with the tremendous climate emergency we have. We're going to need a lot of trained photovoltaic technicians to just begin to address the climate emergency we've got. So I don't know, it's fun to think about the old days and the times we've had, but we're up for some tremendous challenges ahead. And I think that the technology, it's a perfect storm right now. You know, we've got the technology we need. We've got the impetus to do it. I think we're going to get some support at the national level, I hope, soon. There's certainly a new international breeze blowing that I'm very encouraged. And I think that solar energy is going to play a key role in being able to move us forward. And it's just delighted to be able to be a small part of that whole movement. And it really is a movement. And it is a very exciting time right now.
You couldn't put it any better. I'm encouraged also. I agree, we have a huge challenge, a formidable challenge. So as I like to say to everybody, take your vitamins. We're going to need every last bit of strength that we've got to accomplish this.
Absolutely. It's a challenge, but I'm encouraged these days. I'm hopeful. I think that we've got part of the solution. It's not the only thing, but I think solar energy is going to be a big part of what we need to do moving forward.
Hey, listen, thanks for being part of the Net Positive.
It's a pleasure.
That's it. Thanks for tuning in to this edition of The Net Positive. We'll see you next time.